You're listening to The Voice of the Valley, KROX in Crookston, Minnesota, 1260 AM and 105.7 FM, and 92.1 FM in Grand Forks and East Grand Forks. It is 20 till 11 a.m. on this Thursday, December 7th, as it's time for our Valley Talk program. And joining me today is Cliff Nelson and Alan Dragseth, as they are going to be having a presentation on the evolution of sugar beets in the Red River Valley coming up next week. Cliff and Alan, how are you doing today?
Just fine.
I'm doing great.
It's great to have you guys on, and this is going to be a very interesting presentation that you're going to be going over. So what are going to be some of the things that will be discussed during the presentation of the evolution of sugar beets in the valley?
Well, I'm going to be talking about, I got experience inside the factory, so I'm going to try and explain the process of changing beets to sugar as they pass it through the factory.
And I guess he wants me to talk on early sugar beets, how they were harvested and planted and so forth.
So how was this idea come up to have a presentation on this?
I guess I found out that since I grew up on a sugar beet farm, and I often talk about how things used to be harvested and that, I found out there's quite an interest in that. So I got the idea that why not put on a presentation so that some of the younger folks can learn how it was done in the early days and probably bring back some fond memories from some of the older people that used to work in the beets and that kind of thing.
And then how did you get Alan and Scott Knudsen's going to be also doing a part of the presentation. But Alan, how did you get involved in this?
Well, Cliff asked me to do it. I was one of the ones that started the Sugar Beet Museum here in town 19 years ago, I guess now. And so we got lots of old equipment and stuff there, and I give tours. I've had sugar beets all my life. My dad had, I've got records of his from 1925, and he maybe had them before that. I don't know. I never asked him. So I've grown up with sugar beets my whole life and been around most of the equipment that's was used and is used now.
Yeah, it's we were talking a little bit about the very beginnings of the sugar beets, and I think it's a very interesting story as to how the sugar beets got started here in the Red River Valley.
Yeah, a guy moved here from Michigan in 1918 by the name of Carl Wiggin, and they were raising sugar beets in Michigan, and he brought some seed along and planted it up in the north part of Crookston here, and that fall he dug them up with a garden fork or a potato fork and put them in gunny sacks and sent them down to Chaska, which had a beet factory, and they sent back word that they were good quality and he should plant some more. And then a few years, I don't know how soon after that, Minnesota Sugar Company got interested and that eventually became American Crystal, and then they built a factory finally in East Grand Forks. Grand Forks put on a big push for it and got it moved over there. They were thinking of building it here in Crookston, I guess, originally. And then I was in 26, and then not 1948, they built a factory in Moorhead, and 54 here in Crookston. It's gone from there, from a few sugar beets in a garden to 400,000 or 500,000 acres.
Were those first sugar beets planted, was that the goal to eventually harvest them, or was he just curious if it would even grow out here?
I have no idea. I was contacted last winter from a guy in California. His great-grandfather was a brother to this Carl, and they were cleaning out his office after he died, and they found some letters that were written in, one is postmarked 1919, but it's all in German. He sent them to me because they couldn't read them, and I haven't found anybody that can translate them either. He figured it was Russian-German, so it's a little different dialect than what, I don't know anything about German. But anyway, I haven't been able to get him translated, so I'm hoping someday that we'll find that he refers something to the sugar beets. But
Yeah, that would be really interesting if those letters can unlock a little bit more of the history, because you guys have a lot of history of the sugar beets in the Red River Valley, and that's going to be part of the presentation. But you're also going to be going looking at, you know, the very beginnings of things, and then all the way up to now, because things have changed drastically, really in all areas of sugar beet harvesting.
Yeah, I grew up on a sugar beet farm north of East Grand Forks. My grandfather was one of the pioneers in the valley here. In the stories and stuff he told, I think he started raising beets in about 1922. He told about first planting beets. He didn't have a planter for planting beets, so he used a grain drill. And he would cut tin and put between the rows so that he could create rows with a grain drill. He started with 5 acres of beets. And that's kind of laugh at that today, because it probably takes 5 acres to turn some of this equipment around on now. But I can imagine that the amount of labor that went into growing those 5 acres was probably equal to or more than what it takes to grow 500 acres today. And he tells about harvest when they would cut the top off one beet at a time and throw them into a pile. And then they would fork the beets from this pile onto a horse-drawn wagon. And in his case, he would take the wagon 4 miles into Oslo, where he had to fork the beets off the wagon onto a railroad car, because this was before East Grand Forks factory was built, and they would be shipped down to Shaska, Minnesota for processing at that time.
Totally different process than what it is nowadays.
And the early seed was called multi-germ, which meant that more than one plant would come up from each seed. And my mother, I can remember her telling that as a girl, she worked in the beet fields thinning, and they'd crawl on their hands and knees, and after the field had been cross-cultivated, so there was little blocks that were left, they'd grab one plant, dig the rest of them away with their hand, so they'd leave one plant, and then they'd crawl to the next block and crawl all the way down the field and back that way. You can't get anybody to do that anymore.
No, that's...
Well, now the seed is monogerm, they call it, where only one plant comes up per seed. And we found that with Roundup Ready, where we don't need to have weed problems, we can spray it once with Roundup or twice maybe and kill all the weeds. And after we bought the company, we figured out that we can space plant them. They used to think they had to be 12 to 20 inches apart. Now we plant them about 4.5 inches apart, and they store better, they process better, and so it's changed a lot.
Yeah, very different having to go on your hands and knees to right, pick through. Who knows how many acres to do this? And now things have changed so different. And there's actually going to be some displays on at the presentation that shows some of that history.
Yes. Well, I'm a collector of models, so I've got some early model cats, tractors and stuff, early John Deere's and stuff of the row crops and stuff in the early days. I also, since I was a steam engineer, I had made some model steam engines, and that is going to be on display too. And along with the labor involved with all the labor involved with farming beets in the early days, we used to have migrant labor. We provided housing for them, and they stayed all summer because they would first have to go out. We called it blocking the beets, where they cut all the beets out and left beets every 10, 12 inches. And then after that, they had short handle hoes, and they crawled on their hands and knees to do this from one end of the field to the other. And then two or three times during the summer, they'd have to go back out and weed the beets because there was no way of killing off the weeds and that. So very labor intensive in the early days. And this went on until I don't know when Roundup started taking over, but it's pretty recent. I don't know the dates. Maybe Alan does.
I don't know, but it's probably 10, 15 years ago that we quit having to have hand labor to thin and weed the beets.
really, really interesting here as we are talking with Cliff Nelson and Alan Draxeth as they're going to have a presentation on the evolution of sugar beets in the Red River Valley. When and where is this presentation going to take place?
Well, we're going to have it down at the Golden Link, the Senior Center, and this will be on December the 13th, a Wednesday, and they'll start at 1 p.m. and go until we're done.
And who can attend?
I'm sorry?
Can anyone attend this?
Yes, it's open to the public.
And it's going to be Cliff, Alan, and then Scott Knutson, who will also be speaking as well and talking about. And also there will be those displays. And one of the things that we were talking about before we came on the air, Cliff, was the Ford truck that's going to be on display. And you've been asked some questions about how things were done before hydraulics were put on automobiles.
Yeah, I seen a pattern one day of a 1929 Ford truck, and so I ordered it. So I made this truck out of wood. And then I got the idea, rather than putting a stake bed box on it, From memory, I built a sugar beet box on how beets were unloaded back in the days before they had hydraulics. And then one thing led to the other. I added to the display part of the piler, so that then I found a little winch, so it actually works. It shows how the truck box dumps and how the side folds down, so you can get a visual idea on how beets used to be unloaded before we had hydraulics and stuff to do this with.
And I imagine it's a lot easier now with the hydraulics.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They pull on a piler now, and it's all in dumps, and the driver, you know, got a couple buttons to push, and the hydraulic sticks the box up, and then about 3-4 minutes, they're unloaded, and boxes down, and they're gone.
What are some of the biggest changes that you've seen in your guys' experience with sugar beets?
Well, probably the two biggest, most important things that have happened with harvesting is lifter wheels instead of spades or plows that pop the beets up out of the ground, because they dug a lot of dirt up and stuff. And then the gravel cleaning system, which takes the dirt out of the beets before you load them in the truck. And in my opinion, those are the two biggest things that have happened, because it makes harvesting go faster. And I can remember wet years before we had the grab rolls, trucks would come back and you could see the pile of dirt and mud in the back of the box, above the box, you know. And now you just get back a couple of wheelbarrows full. And
one of the changes that I've noticed, that I experienced, one big change is when they were able to go from hand topping the beets and stuff to a mechanical harvester. Our first mechanical harvester was an International one row. And on a good day, we could probably harvest 2 loads on a single axle truck. And, nowadays they're hauling sugar beets with semis. And I pulled in behind a semi the other day, and what used to take 2 days for 2 loads, they loaded this semi, and I had my watch on it, and 3.5 minutes he had a load, because they've gone from 1 row harvesters to 12 row harvesters. And I just, it's beyond belief how fast they can put a load on nowadays.
And it really makes you appreciate those advances in technology. Yeah.
We've got several of these harvesters at the museum, and after the Second World War ended, the government set up a corporation or whatever that gave out grants to machinery companies, because there was a shortage of labor, and they wanted somebody to develop a machine that would completely harvest them, and like the machine that Cliff referred to as International Harvester became the most popular one-row machine. And it topped, cleaned, and lifted the beets, and then they were put on. They went up an elevator and were dumped on a conveyor belt on a cart pulled behind the beets, and 2 people stood on that cart and grabbed the beets and pried the mud off from it and dropped the beets down into the tank, and the dirt fell off the back, and then they were elevated up into a truck, so that was the first big mechanical change after after the Second World War. It came out in 1946, and it's just gone from there. And one row, two row, three row, then four row, then six row, and eight rows, and now a good share of the guys have got 12-row machines. And every time it happened, people would say, oh, that's too big. It can't work, but it's they found a way to do it.
Another thing that brings to mind, when I was young, when they were harvesting beets, still hand topping, and while they had advanced from throwing beets into a pile to throwing beets into rows, making rows out of them. Well, there was a loader that was made right here in Crookston by the Hesby Company. It was just down the street here a little base. And in order to load a truck, you had it backed up behind the loader. So they had to back up behind this loader to get it to get the load on. I seen one work. We didn't have one, but I seen one working one time. So there was you had a chain on the loader or means of pulling the truck backwards, but the driver would be standing out on the running board to steer the truck and stuff as they pulled it backwards through the field. So that's among other things that we'll probably be talking about, because there used to be the Hesby Company or Hesby in town here. He made one of the very first farm tractors, gasoline-driven farm tractors in the U.S., and that was made here in Crookston. So just beside beets, there's a lot of history on farming in Crookston here.
Yeah, and also we were talking not just about the transportation history, but also just the history of the factory and how much things have changed at the factory alone.
Yeah, well, they're modernizing it with computers and everything now, that way less people working. And if I don't know if they'll allow you back there, but if you really want to see something and go back in the sugar end of the factory and watch them running the pallet fork machines and loading pallets of beets, you'd swear somebody gets run over, but the guys know what they're doing, and it's really interesting just to watch that.
Another interesting thing is from the factory end, the Crookston, the factories do different things. They're not all copying each other. So Moorhead, for example, packages, just small packages and stuff that you buy from the grocery stores. Crookston factory, we were pretty much doing bulk. So the Hershey Company, we were authorized by Hershey. They would come and inspect the plant, and all the sugar that Hershey used came out of the Crookston plant. And another thing that's happened in the plants in the last few years is molasses. There's still a fair amount of sugar left in the molasses, which is a byproduct. So East Grand Forks and Hillsboro have involved where they learn a new process to send the molasses back through the process again to extract more sugar out of it. So the molasses all gets shipped to either East Grand Forks or Hillsboro so they can again extract more sugar out of it. And another thing that's probably not well known is that the plants are self-contained. They use steam for a lot of steam for processing, but also a lot of electricity, and they generate their own electricity. The Crookston plant here, we are able to put out 7 megawatts of electrical power, 2 generators, which would probably power the whole city of Crookston here if need be. It's just another thing that the public is not really well aware of. So another thing I'll be discussing a little bit on my part of the conversation.
And the bulk sugar, those big, the two big tent-like looking buildings out at the factory out here, that's bulk sugar is stored in that. Well, it gets to be more sugar than they can store, and so they used to store it in totes and warehouses and stuff. And in recent years, American Crystal has built two big, they started with one and now they've built another one. I think it's done close to Chicago, and the bulk sugar is shipped there, dumped in that building, and then they can reload it onto semis and stuff to haul it to like Hershey or big companies that use a lot of sugar.
That's a topic that Scott's going to be talking about, is the how they promote sugar and stuff. So a number of the sugar processing plants have combined, and they call themselves United Sugar. Like Ellen mentioned, they have a big warehouse in Chicago, and so they promote sugar together, you know, so that they have more clout, you know, to selling sugar and that kind of thing. And Scott knows more about that than I do, because he's part of the board, and that's going to be part of his conversation we're having.
And it's going to be a very interesting one that's going to take place on December 13th at 1 p.m. at the Golden Link Senior Center. Cliff and Alan, you already dropped so many great nuggets here on our Valley Talk discussion today, and I'm sure that the presentation is going to be filled with even more very exciting and interesting information, a couple of displays on there as well, and it's open to everyone. And Alan and Cliff, thank you very much for joining me on today's Valley Talk program. I hope the discussion goes great.
Thank you for having us.
Again, that was Cliff Nelson and Alan Dragseth here talking about the evolution of the sugar beets in the Red River Valley. Their discussion, again, will take place on December 13th at 1 p.m. at the Golden Link Senior Center, and this is open to anyone. And now it is time to hear from the AP News.